I've been asked to record a few memories of when I first came to Road and what Road was like. My name's Alan Allen, and I live at Elms Farm House, 42 High Street, which was formerly occupied by Burke Dunkley and family. But the house stood empty for 9 months, so it was in rather dilapidated state. And one of the things I think that was most depressing was that the whole place had been painted with oil-bound distemper, and the whole lot was painted mauve. We later on discovered that there, on average, there were 7 layers of wallpaper in every room. But it was some time before we got to that. There were only 2 rooms at the house which were habitable, really. And that was what is now a dining room downstairs, and a bedroom upstairs, and these had been let to someone, some member of the family, and so they were in better condition, and they were habitable. And the rest of the house was in shocking state. What's now the living room, a cow had been in there and lay down by the fireplace and smashed almost half the flooring, because they were boarded floors in those days. And so I just could not believe that my wife was prepared to tackle this place. But she was, she was pushing me, rather. Although I fell in love with the place straight away, I knew that it was just a job for me. And my original intention, actually, although I wasn't working as a builder then, because when I came out of the services, I decided that I was never going to go back in the building trade, and I would like to be a blacksmith. Well, of course, blacksmith was a dying trade in those days, and so I got a job which was even more interesting with a firm of boilermakers. And for 9 years, I did boiler making. And so, quite often, Road was only a dormitory to me, because the firm that we worked for, obviously, there were an awful lot of boilers, steam boilers, in Northampton at that time, and factories. When they shut down, it was, if there were any shutdowns, it was always at a weekend. So we had to work weekends to repair boilers. And the firm seemed unable to accept the fact that, it was possible to have days off in the week. But they didn't believe in that. Felt that you had to work all the hours that God sent, and our standard time was from 7:30 in the morning till 5, well, till 5:02. I don't know how they worked that out, but then around 5:10 a guy used to come round and say, we're really pushed, you know, so you'll stop on a bit, won't you? Well, if you stopped on a bit, you stopped till 7, you worked till 7. And if you were very unfortunate, somebody else came around about 5:50 and said, well, you know, we're a long way behind. Do you think you could stay tonight? So if you agreed to stay, that was 9 o'clock you were going to finish. So from 7:30 in the morning till 9 o'clock is a very long day. Boilermaking is hard work. And so, of course, very often I didn't see Road, in, particularly in the winter, I didn't see Road in the daylight hours. But when we first came, they still had a baker. And the infant school, as it was then called, was recommended as a very good school. And there was a very good bus service to Rhode. So there were all these things in favour. And my wife investigated them all. And we found that it was a really good spot to settle. But incredible as it may seem, in front of my house, there were a pair of thatched cottages. And the high street there was extremely narrow, really narrow. To protect the occupants of the cottages, there was a raised path across the front and a pale fence. What led to their ultimate demolition was the fact that, being thatched, and they were thatched with straw, they always had wire netting over the roof to protect it from the birds and that. And, of course, this gradually got more and more dilapidated. And some thatch, after a bit of a storm or something, some thatch slipped off and yanked the wire down into the road. And then, of course, a passing vehicle caught it and tore a great deal of thatch off one of the cottages. That was Harry. Mrs. Dyde lived in the top one, and her brother Harry lived in the lower one. And I think it was Harry's roof that suffered the most. But at the time, Ashby was managing them, letting them and that. And after a lot of discussion, they decided the best thing to do was to demolish them, because they were a bit ramshackle. And of course, this was done. It was a very hilarious operation, because the demolition contractor only had an old-fashioned chaise side tractor. He was three parts mad himself, I think. And his men were comedians by right, so it was wonderful entertainment for anyone who was there. But of course, when it was all cleared away, I was able to negotiate with the council to make an entrance straight into my place, as it is now, and put a wall or a hedge up. Well, we set up for a hedge because there's such a lot of stone walls in Rhode. And that's how it came the way it is now. Incidentally, if you're walking up the high street, there is a bit of a shrubbery thing on the front garden, and there's a conifer there growing in this bed. And an interesting point is that the conifer is planted where the kitchen, the second house, used to be. So give an idea of how close things were. Now, to backtrack a bit, coming to Rhode from Northampton. Now, I'd known a van by this time, and I bought myself a new van. And of course, there was no M1 then, and so you came straight from the bottom of Wooden Hill, along Collentry Strait, to that rather bad bend, just before you come through what is now almost a cut-in before you approach Court North Turn. And I moved on the Saturday, and on that Saturday morning there was a motorcyclist killed on that nasty bend. So it was not the best atmosphere, shall we say, on our first move to Rhode. But there were much ruder shocks to come than that, I think, really, because when we got into the place, the gas, you couldn't put the gas on, so it wasn't safe. And we had arranged for a gas fitter to come and fix a gas stove up, but the chap had to start from square one. The first thing he had to do was put another beater in because the old one was in a terrible state. And so it obviously took the man some time. And I always remember that my little girl, she couldn't have been much more than 2.5 year old. This is Judy, the eldest one. And she said to this gas man, "How long are you going to be? Because we could do with a cup of tea." And my wife and I were both tickled pink with it. Because we of course, hadn't said anything to her about it. And she went up to the gas man and came out with it. Which, I mean, he laughed. He thought it was wonderful that such a little dot could tell him this. And anyway, we eventually got the gas on. But they wouldn't put the electricity on because it was so dangerous. And I remember saying to an electrician from the electricity board who was checking it through, I said, "Well, there's a shed out there," I said, "which used to be, they've made it into a dairy." And I said, "It appears that the wiring in there is in a much better state than the wiring in the house." So I said, "Do you think that it would be possible to use any of the sockets in that place?" So he said, "Well, I can soon check." So he went into this dairy place and he measured it through. And so when he came out, I said to him, well, what do you think?" "Well, mate," he said, "quite honestly, I think you'd be safer in the electric chair than in there." So he said, "We don't put the electricity on until you..." And then he told me sort of some of the very basic things that I must do. Obviously, it's got to be rewired, but there were some, with a few basic adjustments, we could have power on. So, obviously, I got that done, and then we got gas and electricity. The water, well, I turned the water on, and it led pipe. And it wandered through the house, but of course, it was okay between the bedroom floor because it was supported by the bedroom floor. But when it was exposed anywhere, obviously with the house being empty, the frost burst pipes, and altogether between the point of entry and the last point where I needed water, there were 17 bursts in the lead pipe. So I plumbed as many of these as were absolutely essential. And of course, I was going to put copper pipe in later, but owing to the hours I worked, it was very difficult for me to go and buy anything anywhere. The chaps on our firm always used to say, "Well, we can't do much because even the pubs are shut when you let us go home." So it was very, very long hours. And road, of course, was in those days. It was obviously a much quieter village. And as I say, the high street was so narrow. And then there was a big building. George Whiten was living there at the time, and there was a big building which I'm told, as a matter of interest, that somebody used to show films in there before some of the picture houses opened in Northampton. And another interesting point is that when that cinema there closed, it was on the upper floor there, and when that closed, and a very enterprising man from Hartwell bought all the seats, fitted them in lorries, and made a bus service to Hartwell. So I thought that was very enterprising. But the village itself was, as I say, very much quieter in those days. My wife, I had the only transport that we got was this van. So my wife was very reliant on buses and that. And she found them very good. And she was able to do what she wanted using the existing bus service. And we were looking forward to sending our daughter to the school because, as I said, that had a very good name. With regard to what was going on in the village, I worked such long hours that I didn't see a great deal of village life, really. And in fact, it was very interesting that in the cottage next door to me, number 40, where Mr. Chambers used to live, and his daughter had married Richard Lutz, and they lived there as well. And Richard and I became very friendly. Incidentally, Richard kept his car in a railway goods wagon, which was sawn in half, in the front of my house. He was the first person I met from road because he came to Northampton to see me to find out if he could continue to use the garage when I moved to road. So that was another interesting thing, that not many people would have half a railway goods wagon in front of their house. But it all fitted in very nicely because it was partially hidden behind the old thatched cottages. Richard helped me with some of the external jobs, clearing the yard. I mean, there were three beef cattle in the yard when I came, and a tractor in the barn, and a lot of old accoutrements were left there. So,
what, actual cattle?
Yeah, the three live beef steers they were.
What did you do with them?
And I had an agreement with them that as soon as they possibly could, they would sell the steers. And actually, the chap on the morning that I came to look at the house, which was a wet Boxing Day, this was Mr. Hillier, the guy, and he was struggling with a flat battery, intending to remove this tractor, and he said that he could spare me about 5 minutes. Now I said, look, mate, buying a house is quite often the most major thing in a person's life. So if you expect me to make a decision in 5 minutes, you're looking at the wrong guy. And I said, anyway, it would be a cash deal. Well, after 9 months waiting for somebody to come with some money, he almost dropped the battery. And there were, you may not believe this, but there were 2 feet deep of manure in the yard at the back, because that's where they raised cattle in those days. And I think he would have laid down a road in that manure when he heard that I was going to pay cash. And so, anyway, he did sort of allow me to look over the property then. And my father-in-law came with me, and he got the which ordinary shoe, which we used to call, they were very light type of shoe. We used to call it tea drinkers. And you can imagine him kind of shuffling about under the walls, anywhere where there was a bit of sound footing to keep out of this manure. And my wife said to me, you can imagine what it was like on a wet boxing day. My wife said to me, well, what do you think of it? And I said, well, it's absolutely perfect for me. Oh, she said, I'm very pleased because I'm beginning to get fed up of looking. And then my father-in-law in Broad Yorkshire said, if thou buys this, thou's bloody mad. But nevertheless, I did go ahead and buy it. I've been very happy there ever since.
I can remember when your chimney fell over and your wife went up and helped. And I thought how brave she was.
Yeah, well, she was a climber, you see. So,
because she was right on top of the roof.
When those chaps were rebuilding Gavin's chimney, because my chimney wants some repair now. And I said to the blokes, well, I said, I don't know whether I could find it, but I've got a picture of me when I rebuilt that chimney. And I said, I tell you what, I'd have to have a better scaffold now than I had in those days. I did rebuild the chimney. Well, we re-slated the roof and all, but I did rebuild the chimney, and my wife used to help me in those days, because, even the kids were happy at a later stage when Rosemary came along. They were very, very happy to sit up on a scaffold, and they'd keep their crayons and that in the gutter, and their sketchbooks on the slates or whatever was there for a roof, wherever we were, and they were quite happy sitting there and drawing. So I don't know how much.
Carry on.
That brings me to another point, nothing to do with road, but and a long, long time later it was, because must have been 10 years later. The company that I worked for changed their style of work entirely, and I just couldn't see me fitting into the new type of work, and so I handed my notice in. And the new general manager, he was very shocked, and he said, why was I quitting? And I said, well, because the style of work is totally different. And the job that I've always done, sort of thing, is virtually disappearing. So I said, I've got a bit of property in various states of repair, and I said, I think it would be a good idea if I packed up here and started on my own. Well, he said, it's expensive business setting up in boiler making on your own. I said, I'm not doing boiler making. I said, I'm going to something that I swore blind I never would do, and I'm going back in the building trade. And he said. So I said, well, yes, but I said, I'm still fairly young, and I'd like to go. Well, I said, I've more or less got to do it, because by this time I'd acquired 6 houses.
In Road?
Just number 40 in Road, and 4 at New Duston, and of course my own house. And so I then decided that I would start on my own, and much against the grain, I would go back to the building trade.
Was this in the 60s?
May 1960, I started on my own. When we were talking about my roof and the chimney and that at Road, I was reminded that I was demolishing a chimney stack in Bridge Street, Northampton. And they're five-storey buildings, and the chimney stack stood, it was an eight-flue stack, which was quite big, and it towered above the buildings. So it was a terrific height. And from the roof to the top of the chimney, there were nearly 4,000 bricks in it. So you can tell it was a fairly massive thing. And I put a what passed as a scaffold up in those days. And I had to, every time you wanted to get up onto the scaffold, you had to crawl through the overhead electric cable. And all I'd slit some hose and put it on the cable, sort of as protection. And needless to say, I didn't go up and down any more than I was obliged to. But I found that there was some reason why I couldn't put a scaffold right around this chimney. Something to do with other people's property. And I found that on the one corner, I just couldn't successfully reach the bricks. I'd taken all the heavy blue bricks off the top and the chimney pots and all this, and my wife wanted to go somewhere the next day, and she said, could I mind Rosemary, the youngest girl, who was about 3.5 years old, I think. And I said, well, I can't stop working on this chimney. So she said, well, take her with you. She's all right on the roof. So I took Rosemary with me. And as I say, there were no laws about, well, the laws about scaffolding weren't enforced in those days. So any scaffolding we had was very, very precarious. And I took a small bucket up, a 1 gallon bucket, galvanized bucket, turned it upside down and stood it on the corner of the scaffold and chucked a sack on there. And I said to Rosie, you know, you sit on there, Rosie. And when I'm going down to dump the bricks down the chute, don't you move. You stay on sitting on the bucket. The rest of the time, I said, you can, when I'm up here, you can move about and work. In fact, I said, if I stuff some wire netting down the chimney, you can stand in the flue and you can give me those bricks. So this was what Rosie was doing when I was up there. And then every time I went down, I was very careful to make sure she sat on the bucket, because I usually wouldn't move. And so I got her perched on the bucket, and I had rather a lot of bricks on the scaffold. And I was concerned about the weight, so I'd got to dump those down. And I was busy sending these bricks down the chute. And I could hear somebody in the yard below coughing and spluttering. So I looked out, and it was a police sergeant. And he said, hold on a minute, he said, I want to have words with you. So I said, oh, all right. Well, I said, just come up the ladder. So, of course, when he got up the electric cables, electric overheads, he said, this is live wiring, isn't it? I said, yeah, but you're all right. You can come up through the... I said, I've got some hose pipe on there. You can come up through there. I'm not coming up there, he said. Well, I said, what do you want? Well, he said, someone went to the toilet in Lloyd's Bank, and they looked out, and they saw a child sitting on a scaffolding. A very young child, he said. I said, yeah, that's my daughter. Oh, he said, well, I said, she sat on a bucket. what do you want? So he said, well, I've got to find out if the child's all right. I said, well, I'm telling you, she's all right. Yeah, she sat on that bucket. But I said, if she hears me talking to you, she'll wonder what's going on, and she might... I said, she always stays sitting on the bucket, but I said, you never know, it might make her decide to come and have a look. Well, he said, how does she get up there? I said, well, there's another little ladder, and a short ladder in here. She goes up and down that. But I said, I don't want her wandering about on the scaffold when I'm not up there. And so he said, well, can I see the child? So I said, yeah, I'll go and fetch her. So I got Rosie and carried her down, and he stood on the ladder, and Rosie never used to speak very well, you know, when she was tiny. But he established that she was fine, and she was happy to be with her dad up on the scaffolding. And, well, he said, it appears that, he said, it's very strange to have somebody looking after a child, and the child perched 50 foot up in the air, he said, on scaffolding. Well, I said, they're used to it. Both my kids are used to it. So it'll be quite all right. And so in the end, he was quite happy, and he went away. And he went up back to Lloyd's Bank and told them that, you know, this builder bloke who was working there quite often minded his daughter at work. And she, that's what he was doing. Oh, I don't know what the people at Lloyd's Bank thought.